Do you know, I actually saw the beginning part of the course 64. It says Slept Music by, I think it's Steering. By Steering. Oh, no, well, that's not the person's name. By Steering.
No, that wouldn't be the person's name. Retromaniacs, welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me is...
Glenn83100. Hello, everybody.
And this is episode 10, Glenn. Can you believe it?
Episode 10 already. Gosh, does time fly?
It does. And we'll talk a little bit about the last 10 podcasts in a little bit. But before that, guys, let me quickly tell you what we've got lined up for you today. So we're going to tell you a little bit about what we've been up to, what we've been playing, a little bit about the Beat a Game a Week challenge. We're going to tell you about the results of the site poll, which was the best version of Target Renegade. Then we're going to do a new feature which I've added, which is Glenn versus Andy Music Challenge. And that's where Glenn will pick a track, I will pick a track, we'll play both those tracks, and then you guys get to decide which is the better tune. And the main topic for this podcast is Sonic versus Mario.
Oh, Clash of the Titans there.
It is indeed, mate. It is indeed. So, let me ask you, Glenn, what have you been up to?
Well, what I've been up to recently, because in Leeds it's been snowing a lot, and for Christmas, for some reason, my girlfriend bought me a sledge.
Right, okay.
So me and my girlfriend already had these sledges, so to make use of these sledges, we went to the local park where there's massive hills.
Okay.
So when we got there, I'm not kidding you, the park was packed full of sledges.
Wow.
Loads of people sledging down the hill. You have to be so careful, because when you sledge down the hill, you don't want to bump into anyone. But yeah. I tell you, it was such a thrill. I was a 10-year-old kid again, flying down that hill.
And did your girlfriend go on the sledge as well?
Oh, yeah, she has a nice little pink sledge.
Does she?
She jumped on a pink sledge and, you know, go down the hill. I tell you, all that time, we just missed people, we just missed trees. And we've not had an accident or fallen over. And then just about as we're walking home, my girlfriend's mate and my mate says, let's take a video of us just going down the sledge.
Right.
So me and my girlfriend walked up, and all of a sudden my girlfriend fell over and she banged her nose right on the sledge.
Oh, crap.
And her nose just bled all over the sledge. And I went, oh, no.
And did you upload this video on YouTube?
No, it was not actually caught on video.
Oh, man. You could have been sent that, so you've been framed or something. But is she all right, then? Is she okay?
Oh, she's fine. She just banged her nose.
Right, okay. So, yeah, sledging's fun. I did that a few years ago when I was in Yorkshire. I'd never done sledging before, but I really enjoyed it. You know, the whole family did it down there, all the in-laws. All right, let me tell you a little bit what I've been up to. Now, Glenn, I've been saying for ages that I've been moving house, so I haven't moved house technically. By the time this podcast comes out, I would have been in my new house, but I'm actually collecting my house keys this Friday, and we're going to be slowly taking things over on the Saturday, the Sunday, the Monday, but we're actually moving house on Valentine's Day.
Oh, Valentine's Day. I'm going to the local Red Hot Buffet where they have lots and lots of food you can pick from.
Oh, wow.
Going there for the day.
I think my Valentine's Day is going to be slightly not as romantic, Glenn. It's going to be me, well, carrying loads of stuff because I'm you know, doing the removal with my father-in-law. And once we've moved in, I think my in-laws are going to be in the house. So we can't really do anything too, you know, too fancy or romantic. But, you know, it'll be nice anyway.
A nice microwave meal for two.
I think so. You know, I think we'll eat something healthy. So let me ask you as well, Glenn, what have you been playing?
Well, I've been playing recently Chase HQ.
On which system?
I've been playing it on the Commodore Amiga. Thought I'd give that game a try out.
So did you ever play the actual arcade game, Glenn?
Yes, I did, but I don't remember a lot of it.
Right, so had you played a lot of the Amiga version before playing it recently, or is this new to you, you know? You
haven't played it? Well, the reason why I played that game, because I heard you and Swaney talking about it, and I went, yeah, I remember Chase HQ. Yeah, I have a go at that. So downloaded the Amiga ROM version and played it on the Amiga. But I have to say, for the Commodore Amiga, it's not really good.
Really? Why?
I don't know, the car looks a bit small, and the... It doesn't look like it runs smoothly.
Right,
and there's no excuse of that, because when you look at Lotus 3, that's like similar type of graphics, but it runs quite well on the Commodore Amiga, so she didn't program it very well.
Yeah, it's a shame. Sometimes it depends on who was programming it. Maybe they ran out of time and they had to release that game, because sometimes developers make the programmers go, right, you need to get this game out by a certain time, and it doesn't give them enough time to iron out the bugs, and they just release it as is, basically, which is inexcusable, really, but it's something that used to happen back in the day.
Now, you're not going to have me saying this very often, but was the Commodore 64 version awful?
You know what, Glenn? I was going to bring that up, because the C64 version is a WTF game. It really is WTF. It really is. You know what all that is, Glenn? It is a poor man's version of the Spectrum version. And have you played the ZX Spectrum version, Glenn?
The Spectrum version was fantastic, just to say the limitation of the Spectrum.
Yeah.
They got the game for Spectrum. They got it running at a reasonable frame rate.
It runs fantastically, and the music on the ZX Spectrum version, Glenn, is phenomenal, because, okay, I've mentioned this previously in other podcasts, like, the SID chip is amazing. The SID chip is a chip designed for music. The ZX Spectrum didn't have that. The ZX Spectrum had the beeper, and then later it had the AY chip. And what they did for Chase HQ and the ZX Spectrum, they used both. So I don't know, it's something, I can't remember how many channels they've managed to get out of it, but it is truly a ZX Spectrum masterpiece of music. It's phenomenal. I can't remember who did it. Maybe it was Jonathan Dunn or someone, but it really is. It's a beautiful track, and we'll have that up on the podcast at some later on. But the C64, it's horrible.
They should get the person who did the C64 version, line them up and say, right, look at the Spectrum version. A system that doesn't have very good sound, or not as good as Commodore 64. It suffers from color clash. Why is it so much better on that? And when you look at the Commodore 64 version, what are you playing at? It's awful.
Again, Glenn, I think it goes back to people wanting games out by a certain time, because it is literally, it is a Spectrum port, but they didn't sort of port it properly, because it's really slow. It chugs along at a slow speed. The animation's terrible. The colour scheme, the Commodore 64 can use loads of colours, and it just went with the Spectrum colours.
But does the car look pretty big on it?
It just doesn't look right.
You see, OutRun's like that type of game, but it runs a lot better than the Commodore 64 OutRun, and vice versa, wasn't so good on the Spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, then there's other games that were really good on C64. Power Drift was another superb game, which was an amazing little racer. Very accurate to the arcade game, it felt like. You know, they really achieved, like, an illusion of speed and so on. All right, let me quickly tell you what I've been playing. And I'm also going to tie this in with my Beat a Game a Week challenge. Now, guys, I've been doing a Beat a Game a Week challenge. So every week I'm going to finish a game and I'm going to post something on the forum. So if you agree or disagree, if you've never played that game, check it out. But the game that I've been playing recently is The Simpsons Arcade. Now, I've actually finished that, Glenn. I finished it on MAME, and I've also been playing the demo of it on the Xbox 360, but I love The Simpsons Arcade game.
Now, Andy, tell us the truth. Have you used a save?
On The Simpsons Arcade? No, I gave myself loads of credits.
Ah.
It took me about, I wouldn't say 4 hours. It took me about less than an hour to beat it. But it's a great game. I mean, when you look at it now, Glenn, visually, it's stunning. Konami did a superb job, and they really went to work with that license that they had. They didn't sort of abuse it, because all the other Simpsons characters appear in this game. You can play as, Homer, Marge, Bart, and Lisa. So what's your view on this particular game then, Glenn?
Do you know, did you review the Commodore 64 version of this game? And it does look really good on the Commodore 64.
You know what, actually, Glenn, what did you think of that version? Because did you see my review of it?
I saw your review of it, and it looks really, really good on the Commodore 64. It even has that intro.
Glenn, honestly, that has to be in my top 10 favourite C64 games ever. How on earth they managed to cram that into the tiny little 8-bit C64 and to get it looking as good as it did, sounding as good as it did, and have that intro, Glenn. Okay, it was multi-load, fair enough, but hey, you can forgive it for that, you know?
They really did push the system to the limit with that game.
Yeah, so what did you think of the actual arcade game then, Glenn? Did you play it much, or you not?
I've seen videos of it, but I've never played it.
Well, I think the perfect thing you should do, Glenn, you should get it out on Xbox 360. I think it's about 800 Microsoft points, maybe, or 1,200. And it's a game that, if you get it, I'm going to get it, and I think Malt's going to get it. And one day, if we have the time, we should all sit there. You can be Homer, I'll be Bart, Malt can be Marge or Lisa. So...
Talking about The Simpsons,
yeah.
Have you seen my Simpsons game review on the Super Nintendo?
Yeah, that's right. It was really good. Bart's Nightmare.
See, that's a Simpsons game I played, but it was a really good game. I really enjoyed it, but it was rock hard.
See, you know, you quite liked that game. I thought it was average. It was an average sort of game because when I was growing up, Glenn, back in the day, the way it worked is you'd play a game in the arcade, and then a few months later, it would get converted to the computers. And I so badly wanted that to get converted to the Super Nintendo, but it didn't. And when I found out that a Simpsons game was coming out on the Super Nintendo, I thought, yes, this is going to be the one. And it didn't, unfortunately.
Well, it wasn't made by... Yeah, it was made by Acclaim.
Yeah, maybe it was something to do with the license that they had lost out on. Because I think the Super Nintendo could have done a decent conversion of it. If you look at how good the C64 version, the Super Nintendo version or Mega Drive version would have been really good if they had done it.
But the trouble is, if Acclaim would have made it, it might have been an LGN game. And you know what that reputation is like.
Definitely right. It probably would have turned out a little bit horrible. But yeah, Glenn, what I'd say, play that game. And I'd say to the community, yeah, that's the game that I've been playing and I've finished. It's Simpsons, the arcade game. I finished it on MAME. I am going to get it on the Xbox. I think I finished 6 games so far, and I think we're in week 6 or 7, I can't remember, this year. And I've got loads more games to try and finish. It's going to be tough because I'm moving house in the next, this week I'm moving. So I don't know whether I'll carry on doing the challenge, but I'll get back to it.
I tell you what is tough, me making this dizzy game.
How far are you into it now then, Glenn?
Now, what I've done now, you can move the camera up and down now. And it will also run on lower speed computers.
Fantastic.
Because now I put a fog in and pop-ups behind the fog.
Cool.
So now it runs a lot better because if you just have the game without the fog and no pop-ups, You need some like a 7i computer, to run it. And
so was this game just like another platforming game, but in 3D? Is that what you're doing where he has to collect things?
Well, what you have to do, each level has different objectives. First level, you have to collect the gold to get past the troll at the gate. Mm-hmm. And then you have to find a book to give to the witch, and she has the key to give to you.
Oh, so it plays like Dizzy, but in 3D, basically.
Yeah, and then it gets to a second level. You have to go through a maze.
Yeah.
And what you have to do, you have to find a pickaxe to get through a piece of rock.
Yeah.
And when you get through the piece of rock, there's the second key. And then I'm on to the third level now, where you have to jump platforms, and if you don't jump correctly, you fall into the water.
So would you say you're about, 30% finished this game, 40%?
I'd probably say getting near to 50.
Near 50, wow, okay. But once you've finished it, Glenn, again, make a video of it if you can, showing it off, and we'll upload it on the site. And hopefully as well, Adam from our York Folk, he will add it onto York Folk, and loads of people can download it.
Well, it's to say, when I'm playing it and when I play the other games I made, I could tell it's been a big improvement.
It sounds like it, especially with 3D. It sounds technically a lot more accomplished.
Oh, it certainly is, but it took a long time to do it, Andy.
It'll be worth the wait, though, mate. It'll be worth the wait.
This is Matt Denaris. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into the Retro Asylum podcast.
Right, let's move on to our next section.
The next section is, what did you think to the last podcast?
Yeah, so the last podcast, what did you think of episode 9?
I really enjoyed the last podcast with you and Swainy. And what I found absolutely fascinating, all the different games we picked for our top 10. Like, Swainy picked quite old games, like Donkey Kong, Pac-Land, and Chase HQ. Such as I tend to pick the ones more into the 90s. So Swainy tend to pick the ones in the early 80s. I tend to pick the ones in the early 90s.
Yeah, I think I picked similar games to Swainy, and the reason is because Swainy's like only 2 years older than me. So, but it was still interesting though, Glenn. Even though you're younger, you still managed to have some games in there, like Pac-Land as well, because you put that, I think, on the site that you used to play it somewhere for 10p when you ran out of, when you had change or something.
Just say Daytona USA and Ridge Racer were like £1 to 50p kind of games, and when you start running out of money, you want to make your money last a bit more, and at Pringles Valley, this campsite, they had all different kinds of arcade machines, old and brand new. And Pac-Land was one of the arcade machines, and that was a 10p game. So to make my money last a little bit longer, so have a go at Pac-Man. And that was brilliant at the arcades. I really love Pac-Man.
See, that's what we need. We need places where that actually have like arcades, not just the dancing games. I want to go looking down South End. I want to go to certain beaches to look for certain things and see if I can find certain arcades. How do you think the podcast is going now, Glenn? Because we've done 10 of them now. So what's been your favourite podcast that you've done? You know, which has been your favourite episode?
Well, the episode I done or my overall favourite episode?
Just overall favourite of the last 10.
You know, I really enjoyed the last one, talking about games we liked in the arcades. And I found it really fascinating what games we picked. Mm. But a couple of games, we picked the same game. Like Street Fighter 2. Did we all pick that one?
I think so. I think, well, the majority of it, I think that was the highest rated game that we picked, you know, because I was going to do, like, add them all up and find out and then do a top 10 that way. And Street Fighter 2 was the game that came into the charts the most. But, I'd say my favourite podcast that we've done so far has been the last one, the top 10 arcades, and also the one that we did, you know, our memory of retro gaming, episode 8. I really enjoyed that. But I mean, I think the way this podcast, Retro Asylum, has been going, Glenn, it's been going fantastic. Episode 1 was a great episode. Episode 2 was even better. And they just seem to be getting better and better. And we seem to be attracting more and more and more people now, because we've got 16 iTunes reviews now, Glenn, which is fantastic, you know?
A lot more than the 1HMPS.
Well, actually, 1HMPS, my old retro gaming podcast, and your old retro gaming podcast, that's got 16 iTunes reviews as well. But
that's right.
I think this one is better than that one, because I think the other one, it felt a little bit forced, because we had to churn it out every week and so on. And then I started burning out. And yeah, I want this one. Every 2 weeks is fine. And that's another thing I want to talk about a little bit later on. We are going to have other people presenting the podcast that we're adding. All right, so let's move on to a whole new different section, Glenn. Let's move on to the site poll. So if you can tell us, what was the site poll?
What was the best version of Target Renegade?
Right, so we've had a mixed reaction of this. And all this came about, Glenn, because I did a video, a walkthrough video, a playthrough review as well, of Target Renegade on the ZX Spectrum. And some people prefer the C64 version. Some of us prefer the Spectrum version. So let's have a look and see what the scores were, Glenn. What were the percentages? How much did the Amstrad get? How many votes?
Amstrad got 1 out of 10 votes.
Right, and the ZX Spectrum?
That got 6 out of the 10 votes.
Right, and the C64?
That got 2. Slightly better than the Amstrad.
Yep, and what, an other?
Has got 1.
Right, so let me find out from your opinion, Glenn. What was your favourite version of Target Renegade?
I liked the Commodore 64 one.
Really?
I don't know. It's me. I'm biased.
Tell me why. Go on, tell me why you prefer the C64 version.
I remembered it had really good music to it.
But like Swainy said in the last podcast, music only enhances a game. It doesn't make the game any better.
But I have to get the Spectrum slightly less blocky. Mm. The Commodore 64, but Spectrum then suffers from the colour clash.
Right, but Glenn, when was the last time you've played this game, in all honesty, Target Renegade on the C64?
It's a bit of a while ago, I have to be honest. So I have played it.
It probably goes back to rose-tinted glasses, because honestly, I've played them both pretty recent, and the C64, let me tell you my reasons why I don't like the C64. I find the C64 a bit blocky. I find it, the controls, every time you hit someone, it's hit and miss. The collision detection's terrible. People don't fall down. All they seem to do when you punch them is they go backwards. And the flying kick's pretty much useless. A lot of the moves feel useless. It's only one player, and I don't know, it doesn't feel as great as the Spectrum, because the Spectrum, when you hit someone with a flying kick, it feels like you hit them. You've got a lot more moves at your disposal. It's two players. The music's pretty decent, although not as good as the C64. It's pretty good. And I think the overall gameplay is a lot better. But let me read out what a few of the people on the site said, Glenn. Because, you know, it's all about what the forum said. Right, so Retro Shaman, he voted for the Amstrad, and that was purely as it's the only version he played. He remembers it being fun, but unfortunately didn't get to experience it on another machine.
Oh, right.
Teal put, he went for other. Didn't really explain why.
For all versions.
So yeah.
It probably means he liked them all.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what he meant. Okay. Darren Pop, I'd take any version over Renegade 3.
Yeah, he's got a good point. Terrible.
It was one of the worst games ever. Swainy, I had a feeling you'd say this. He picked the 128K Speccy version, but closely followed by the Amstrad version.
Well, in a way, they're both like the same processor in them. And the same memory, so it's easier to port them.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think the Amstrad version is a port or the Spectrum version. I think it's a standalone game because the graphics look very different. And although it plays very similar, it does feel like a slightly different game.
I have never seen the Amstrad version.
No? What I'll do, at some point I'll upload Swainy's 8-Bit Wars video again on the site, so that way we can get an overall idea of, you know, of which was the best version, so that way we can finalize that. So let's move on to our next section, Glenn. And what is our next section?
Next section is Gaming Music C64 Challenge.
Right, so guys, the way this Gaming Music C64 Challenge is, it's going to be Glenn's going to pick a track, and he's going to tell us a little bit about why he likes this particular track on the C64, you know, what game it was on. And then I pick one afterwards, and then I'll tell you why I like that track, who composed the music. And then once we've listened to them, you guys, once you've listened to this podcast, obviously, you can tell us which track you preferred. And maybe you can tell us like another good C64 track that you actually think's even better. So, yeah, Glenn, tell us then, matey, what is the track of your choice and why?
It was released by US Gold, and the music's called Splash Wave.
Right, Glenn. So why did you like Splash Wave? Tell us a little bit why you liked it so much.
What I loved about Splash Wave is the music blended in well with the game on the Commodore 64.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fantastic music. It really did bring out Outrun, what my memories of Outrun was. Because the first time I ever played Outrun was on the Commodore 64. So it was fantastic music.
Right, so what we'll do, we'll have a little listen to it. And then, again, guys, once you've, you know, listen to the podcast, and then once you've heard my track as well, feel free to comment on the podcast on the site and let us know which track you think is better. So let's listen to this tune. Enjoy. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Now, let me tell you my choice, Glenn. Now, I was just like going around on YouTube, listening, looking for game music, because I like listening to game music, basically. And then I remembered a track that I used to love on the C64. And this particular track, Glenn, comes from a game called The Human Race.
Oh, The Human Race. I used to love that game.
Did you ever play it?
I did. I had it on a tape on the Commodore 64. Pretty hard game, though. That first level, you're this monkey. You have to go and get this big banana on top of the tree.
That's it. Honestly, Glenn, it is a tough-as-nails game. It is a hard game. But the whole theme, I think, is it's basically... you need to evolve your character, and every level has got like its own theme music, and it's amazing. It's done, I think it's got about six levels, but each six levels are really, really tough. But the music, which was composed by Rob Hubbard on the first level in particular, is my choice, and it is wow. I don't know how on earth he managed to achieve those sounds out of a C64. It conveys so much emotion. It sounds futuristic at the same time. He really was a genius, Rob Hubbard. And I think at some point we're going to have to do a whole episode where we talk about C64 music. So you know what, guys? Sit back, grab a cup of tea and listen to this track. And once you've listened to it, again, let us know on the comment section when this podcast does come out on the site. Which track you prefer, Glenn's Outrun track or my Rob Hubbard track from The Human Race? Enjoy. Let's move on to the next section, Glenn.
The next section is Clash of the Titans, Sonic versus Super Mario.
Right, so it's the Ron Jeremy lookalike versus the blue spiky one. So, This is going to be a bit of a tough conversation, Glenn. What year did Super Mario first come out in?
Well, it actually appeared in a game called Donkey Kong, and it came out July 1981.
Right.
Before I was born.
Wow. A good few. What year were you born in?
1983. Two years before I was born.
That's, wow. That's,
so Mario's,
that's amazing.
Actually older than me.
Yeah. And what about, what year did Sonic come out in?
Sonic came out on the Mega Drive around about 1991.
Okay, so how are we going to judge this then? Overall, okay, fair enough. Mario came out on Donkey Kong. Then he had another game, which was Mario Brothers, which was a little two-player platform game. It was a great game, but it was just one screen. Now, the games I think we should compare it on are the scrolling platform games. So tell me how much you like Super Mario then. What is it about Super Mario you like? And
what I like about Super Mario, Super Mario Brothers,
yeah,
is I like how the levels have been designed, and especially in the other Mario games like Super Mario World and Mario 64, as it's progressed, they put more and more into the games, such as they put secret passageways and secret things to get secret stuff, and then they had Yoshi, you can ride on Yoshi. So what I liked about Mario is each Mario game in a way is quite unique. Like Mario Brothers 2 is different from Mario Brothers 3. And then Super Mario World is really different from Super Mario Brothers 3.
But remember, though, Glenn, the Mario, the one that we got over here, and the ones that the people got in the US, it's not really Super Mario game at all. It's actually a Japanese game, which they changed the sprites and background, and then they called it Super Mario because the
original Mario Brothers 2, isn't it?
Yeah, the original one is Super Mario. Well, it got released here as The Lost Levels.
Yes,
that
it
was
did.
The original Super Mario game, which was pretty much more or less the same thing, but the gameplay was a lot harder.
Yeah, well, I think the Japanese thought, well, it might be too hard for the people, you know, in the West. So we just bring out another one. Probably they did like we did with Dizzy with Quick Snacks.
Yeah, you know, it's probably why they've done something similar. But I quite liked the version of Super Mario Brothers 2 that we got and the US got, because I think it was varied enough. It added a few new elements where you could pick up things, throw things, and you couldn't do that on the first Super Mario Brothers game.
Such as with Sonic the Hedgehog, they have not really changed it a great deal from Sonic 1, Sonic 2. They only really added Knuckles in when it got to like Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles. So to me, they haven't really changed anything in a great deal, such as each Mario game, they did change quite a lot of things.
Let's talk about the positive thing on Sonic the Hedgehog. So you said Sonic the Hedgehog came out in 1991, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, at the time, on the Sega Mega Drive, the only mascot they had on the Mega Drive was Alex Kidd, which wasn't the greatest mascot. I mean, yeah, fair enough. He had two good games on the Sega Master System, which was Alex Kidd and Miracle World, and that was pretty decent. Not the greatest. Hasn't aged that well, but it was all right. And then Alex Kidd and Shinobi World, which was pretty decent, but not the greatest game.
Yeah, but he's not exactly a mascot kind of character, is he?
No, it wasn't cool. You know, it was just like a weird-looking little monkey creature, basically. And along came Sonic, you know, and he became the mascot for Sega. And did you know, actually, that originally they were going to port it to the 8-bit computers and to the Amiga, but once they realized
it wouldn't work, and I tell you why it wouldn't work on the Commodore 64 and the Spectrum and all that, that just simply doesn't have the processing power to make Sonic move that quick and have a nice color background at the same time. It would have been difficult as hell. They could have pulled it off on the Mega, probably because it had the similar similar processor to the Mega Drive.
Yeah.
But on the Commodore 64 and...
I don't think it would have worked anyway. And I'm kind of glad that Sega kept it just for themselves, because what we got when we got Sonic the Hedgehog was this mind-blowing, beautiful, fast-running game. So, Glenn, how old were you roughly when Sonic the Hedgehog first came out?
1991, so I was about 7 years old.
And was this one of the reasons why you wanted a Sega Mega Drive?
Yeah, because when I was growing up in the 90s, because I grew up in the early 90s, like Andy and Swaney grew up in the 1980s, but I really did grow up in the 1990s. And when I was a kid, Sonic was cool, he's fast, The music was good. You know, Sonic is cool, and Mario's like a short, fat plumber who's very, very slow and take his time. And Sonic was just cool.
So, yeah, how did you hear about this game then? You know, like, why were you so excited about it? Where did you first hear about it? Where did you first play it?
Well, the first time I ever played it is my brother had this friend who had a Sega Mega Drive.
Right.
And we used to have sleepovers when we were kids, and he came round with the Sega Mega Drive and said, right, he says, watch me complete Sonic 1. And there he is. He could be like 3-4 hours. I watched the game from start to finish. Him.
So you just sat there for 3-4 hours.
Just watching him complete, because it's so fascinating. Because at that time, borrowed the Amiga around that, but the I really did have the Commodore 64. Then the Mega Drive was a completely different animal. It was It was like the Xbox of the day.
Definitely. Okay. So, what was it about Sonic which made you think, wow? Was it because you hadn't seen anything graphically looking like that? Had you not seen something move as fast? Was it the actual sprite itself that looked, which was appealing to the kids?
Do you know what's so appealing to the kids? Sonic was quick. The music was cool, like the Mario music. It's a bit childish. But the Sonic music is it actually has a bit of Michael Jackson in it, I heard. I heard rumours and people talking about it.
I've never heard that, Glenn. Really?
No, some people said it was some of it was done by Michael Jackson. I don't know 100% about that, but I heard that from somewhere. Don't count me on that one.
I don't think that's true, Glenn.
I've heard something about that. Somebody talked about that. That's the back of my head, but may not be true, everybody. So don't count on that. But I heard something about that.
All right, we'll move on. Okay, so the gameplay itself thing, Glenn, what was that? You know, why did you like the gameplay then so much? So imagine, there's young little Glenn. He's got the control pad in his hand. You've bought yourself Mega Drive. You put Sonic the Hedgehog on. What happens when you put the cartridge on once you turn the power button on?
Well, once I turn the power on, it goes Sega, and the Sonic rushing past the screen. And then when the game starts, it has like Sonic the Hedgehog, he's like his head's like through a ring or something. And when you first play the game, you're addicted then. You're stuck on that Mega Drive forever because you just love it so much. And I remember the first boss. It's when Dr. Robotnik or Dr. Eggman, whatever his name is.
He's called Dr. Eggman now, isn't he?
Dr. Eggman. Well, it was Dr. Robotnik sometimes.
Yeah.
What, does he fly around in a like flying machine? He has this great big ball and trying to hit Sonic with a big great big ball, and you have to jump over this ball and hit Dr. Robotnik. I remember that being the first boss.
I'll tell you what, Glenn, it was a great game, honestly, because, I mean, I remember, because I've always been a fan of the platforming games. You know, I'd played Wonder Boy, I'd played Mario, and I'd played, I think, Castle of Illusion as well, which was a beautiful-looking game. It was probably, at the time, it was the best Mega Drive platforming game. And then came Sonic, and I'd seen it in the magazines, and I tell you what, the magazine screenshots didn't do this game any justice at all, because it was so much better playing it in real life. Because, again, visually, Glenn, it was just so much colour on the screen and the style of the game as well. Sonic the Hedgehog was a really smart choice of the way they, you know, the colours, the red trainers, the fact that if you could roll into a little ball, Glenn, and you could knock things out, you could go around a loop the loop and go ultra fast, you know?
And it took advantage of Sega Mega Drive's golden gem, the advantage they had over the Super Nintendo. It had a better processor than the Super Nintendo, and Sonic the Hedgehog took advantage of that. They crammed the frame rate right up. See, they could have done it on the Super Nintendo, but I don't think he could have been as fast.
Okay, so let's take this topic a little bit somewhere different. Now, we are trying to compare which is better, Sonic or Mario. Now, bear in mind, the Super Mario Brothers came out on the 8-bit NES, so obviously the graphics and the era it came out, the gameplay was slightly, it was the first of a kind. But what do you prefer, Super Mario Brothers or Sonic 1?
Now, everybody's going to say, I bet Glenn's going to say Sonic.
No,
but it's not Mario. Honestly.
Really? You know what? Okay.
In the end.
I would go for Sonic, actually, Glenn. Tell me why you go for Mario. For, comparing the first game, you know, Super Mario, to Sonic, the first game. Tell us why.
The reason why I liked Mario in the end of the day, because remember it came out around about 1985.
Yeah.
That game did revive the console market, because before then, the console market just completely was almost destroyed in America. There was a great big crash and the console market disappeared. And here comes Nintendo and brings out Super Mario Brothers, and that game really did save the console market in America.
Right. Let me tell you why I prefer Sonic 1 on the Mega Drive over Super Mario's on the NES. And again, you know, I completely understand it came out, you know, in the sort of mid-80s, that game. It was a different sort of generation. But gameplay-wise, I know it's slightly unfair to compare both of them, but because they're the first in that sort of line of game, I'm going to have to go for Sonic the Hedgehog. I think Sonic the Hedgehog is more playable now. Okay, maybe it's slightly unfair. So
I really would compare it more with Super Mario World and Sonic 1.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I'm going somewhere with this. And then Sonic 2 came out. Now, I remember the whole big fuss about this. Sonic 2 came out and it was known as Sonic Tuesday because it came out on a Tuesday. And so what's your view and opinion on Sonic 2?
Actually, out of all the Mega Drive Sonic games, Sonic 2 was my favourite.
Why do you prefer it more than the first game?
Because I think it did run a lot smoother. You could actually play two players on the second one. You could play as Tails on the same level.
Right, okay.
It could have got a bit confusing when Tails lagged behind the screen, but the idea was there.
Yeah, it's true. You had the you could play at the same time on the same screen, so you could help, one person could help beat the bosses by controlling Tails. You also had the split screen where you could race, and then you also had the 3D bit where you had to sort of see who collect the most coins. So it added a few extra gameplay elements, made the graphics look that little bit nicer. The music was more or less the same.
The frame rate was higher.
And I think the addition that did add a bit more gameplay element was when Sonic spun into a little ball. But okay, let's take this to the other side. We briefly discussed Super Mario 2, even though it's not originally a Super Mario game, but it added new elements. You know, you could control the princess, you could control Toad and Luigi. So we'll talk about Super Mario 3. That upped the ante a little bit more, didn't it? You had more abilities.
Or Super Mario Bros. 3.
Yeah, you had loads of abilities on that.
That's one of my favourite Super Mario games, that and Super Mario World. Super Mario Bros. 3 is excellent.
Why did you like Super Mario Bros. 3 so much?
What I loved about Super Mario Bros. 3, Nintendo didn't just think, yeah, we make another Super Mario Bros. Game, we put the same things in. No, they actually sat down thinking, what can we do with this game? What can we do to really improve it?
Yeah.
And they have come up with a marvellous idea of adding like an interactive world on. So instead of going level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, you can now choose the level you want by just moving your pad and joystick to the next level. And what's good, you also come across baddies that patrol around the levels. And if you get to the end of the level, you also get a ship. If you don't complete the level, the ship moves to another part of the level.
You know what, Glenn? I'd completely forgot about it. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I mean, the things that I was going to say, it added a lot more secrets. You had the warp whistles. You had all the Mario abilities, all the little costumes, which, again, was so much fun trying to see what costume did what. You know, the moment Mario collects the little leaf and he gets a raccoon tail and he starts flying up. And it just amplified everything that was amazing about Super Mario Brothers and made it so much better. I mean, graphically, it looks a lot more better. It looks really cartoony. And I thought, graphic-wise, for a platform game on the 8-bit NES, that was as good as it got. And for years and years and years, that was my favourite platforming game. And again, Glenn, the amount of publicity that game got, because that game, they made a whole film to advertise that game. You know, it was called The Wizard.
The Wizard, yeah. Kind of like a bit of a naff film until it got near the end, though, isn't it? You remember that film?
It was really horrible. It had Fred Savage from, I forgot what that program was called.
Was it a child that goes, I want to go to California, to go in a games competition. And strangely enough, he knew who all the whistles are, and he never bloody played the game before.
Yeah, so, I mean, okay, so we talked about that. Now, let's talk about Super Mario World, then.
Oh, you're talking about the ultimate Super Mario game there. I absolutely adored Super Mario World. It was one of my favourite Super Mario games of all time.
Why did you like this game so much, Glenn? Because you sound so excited.
Oh, it was my favourite Super Mario World game. I never thought Nintendo could have got it any better than Super Mario Bros. 3. I was completely wrong. They actually upped the stakes on this one.
So, all right, so what do they do to make this game better than Super Mario Bros. 3 then?
This time, they added the ability of Mario could actually jump on a creature called Yoshi.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, you know, it could ride around the levels with Yoshi. And this time, instead of using the old power-ups, they had new power-ups like the feather can make, you know, Mario fly.
Yeah.
And they also, there's hidden levels in the game, such as if you complete a level differently, it takes you a different route and you could go on to another set of levels.
Yeah.
And you also have a star. And you jump on the stars, you get even more levels on the stars. And there's actually a way to complete the game by going on the star levels and you skip all the other levels and you end up at Bowser's Castle.
Now, one of the most important things that you left out there, Glenn, now, Super Mario World was the first 16-bit Mario game.
Yes, it was. So
it basically, it was a nice-looking game, you know, on the 8-bit NES, you know, Super Mario Bros. 3 was. And when Super Mario World came out, it looked very cartoony. The graphics were very like a cartoon and they were very cheerful, very happy. The music, again, was very bouncy, very... It had so much character to it, the music, you know. And again, all the secret paths, all the abilities. It had so much replay factor because, you know, even though you could finish the game, you could spend ages trying to sort of find every exit and trying to sort of like finish every particular level. I think it had 98 or something levels.
When it comes down to it, this is what my conclusion is. Super Mario World has more replay value than Sonic 2.
Right, so yeah, so we've talked about Super Mario World. Now let's talk about Sonic 3. What was Sonic 3 like?
By the way, Andy, I have a little look on Sonic music and see if I was correct. And do you know what? Additional music, Michael Jackson at the bottom.
Wow,
so
okay.
I was right, everybody.
All right, so tell us then about Sonic 3 then, Glenn.
Sonic 3 was the Sonic game I didn't play as much as the other Sonic games. I can't really tell you much about Sonic 3 because at that time, I got the Super Nintendo. And at that time, I was going away from Sega onto Nintendo.
But more or less, Glenn, but the point I'm trying to get is to say, it was very similar. It didn't really do anything too different. Yeah, fair enough. It had a lot more colour. It was a lot larger. But it felt more or less like the same game.
It did.
And then we had Sonic CD on the Mega CD, which again was more or less the same thing. Yeah, fair enough, it had time-travelling elements.
And bonus levels.
And bonus levels. But overall, I don't think the leap between what was different between games. Now, like what we've talked about on the Super Mario games is the games have progressed quite a lot. I think it's helped, Glenn, that the fact that Mario started out on the 8-bit computer and then it went to the 16-bit computers because it changed, it evolved. Whereas Sonic just... fair enough, Sonic was on the Sega Master System, but it was pretty much more or less exactly the same sort of thing, but more scaled down. I just don't think Sonic had the substance that Super Mario did.
Yeah, you're right. The trouble with Sonic is that it's a cool game and he's fast and everything, but after that, when they start making other Sonic games, it really brings out a lot of new ideas. And that's why when it got to the Saturn years, he somehow died off and Mario won in the end. It was because when I was a kid, it was Super Mario versus Sonic.
Yeah.
When 1996 came and Mario 64 came out, that was it. Mario won.
But wasn't there was another game. There was Sonic and Knuckles, which was like a little add-on
Sonic
thing.
Sonic Pinball game.
Yeah, but I'm talking about not so much the side games, but actual, you know, Sonic games. Then there was one as well, Sonic Chaos, which I think was on the 32X, I believe.
Oh, I think it was called Knuckles. It was one with just Knuckles in.
Probably it was that one. I know there was one on the 32X.
And then there was Sonic 3D Blast. I think, was it called 3D Blast in this country? It was when Sonic was in like a 3D world, but it wasn't quite 3D. It was like a look-down, pre-rendered 3D, and that came out on the Saturn and the Mega Drive. And for the Mega Drive, it looks pretty good.
Actually, you know what? I've got to give... that was probably my second favourite Sonic game, those 3D isometric ones, because I think that dared to be that little bit different and it looked pretty good. But I think overall, I prefer Mario, Glenn, because I think they evolved a lot more. And if you look at the other games, like the spin-offs, you had, what, Super Mario Kart, you had Dr. Mario, you had Mario Tennis. There's so much more you could do with Mario, where Sonic, unfortunately, just didn't evolve enough, Glenn.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the last decent Sonic game I've played, and I know it's not retro, but I think the last decent Sonic game I've played is Sonic All-Star Racing.
Yeah, you're right there. And even I said on my game review some time ago, I actually liked it better than Mario Kart. And that says a lot.
Me too. I loved Sonic All-Star Racing. But retro-wise, I think we've both reached the conclusion that Sonic is a great game. But I think since I finished it, Glenn, I finished that a few weeks ago on my Beat Game Week challenge. I finished Sonic 1. And don't get me wrong, Glenn, the whole concept behind Sonic was go as fast as you can, try and finish the game. But the way for me to actually finish it, I had to slow everything down. I'd walk along, jump carefully so I wouldn't lose my rings, spin around. And I realized the game was nowhere near as polished and as accomplished, although beautiful looking. The only way I can describe this, Glenn, is like going out with a stunning, beautiful girl with big tits who looks amazing, but she's not all there. She's a little bit thick.
Shallow.
You know what I mean? A bit shallow,
Being like me talking to a nice girl and she's beautiful, all that, but that's all it is. That's what you're trying to mean. But you may have a girl that's probably not beautiful, but you get on with better.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to say, Andy.
Well, I've never compared Super Mario to a girl before.
Well, my conclusion is that... like you say, Mario evolved better. Nintendo sat down, probably at the CEO desk and all that, and thought, right, what can we do to make this game better? And they come up with fantastic plans, such as having Sega think. Sega sat down and think, do you know, it's worked before. We do it again.
Yeah. I think what they should have done, Glenn, is just that they should have just... Although Sonic 2 was better than Sonic 1, I don't think overall, apart from the multiplayer aspect, I don't think it evolved enough. It should have had Sonic doing something completely different. Maybe have some powers, some abilities. Maybe him transforming into different creatures or something, but still go around at fast speed. But it was just the same thing. Left to right as fast as you can, and
they needed Nintendo there to say no, we could do something better than that. They needed somebody from Nintendo there.
Yeah, but back in the day, Glenn, that would have never happened. Like, honestly, now we get Sonic and Mario at the Olympics.
Oh!
You get them in Super Smash Brothers where they fight against each other. And back in the day, who would have thought that Nintendo and Sega would have joined hands and Mario and Sonic would be in the same console? On a different console, like Sega is now making games for Nintendo. Do you know,
if you would have come back in the past when I was like 9, 10 years old and go, do you know, in the future, Mario and Sonic will be on the same system and a Sonic game will appear on a Super Nintendo, you will be laughed at out of existence. People go, don't be so stupid. They're enemies. That will never happen on this... Godforsaken Earth. And do you know what? It's happened. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable that it's actually happened.
In 20 years.
But you know what? All in all, Sonic isn't a bad game. I just don't think it's technically as accomplished as Super Mario. Super Mario's got a lot more replay factor. It's got more... You always want to go back to it, you know?
Yeah, it has better replay value.
Definitely.
Hello everybody, this is Damien and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
I think what we should start doing now is start rounding up the podcast. So first of all, Glenn, I want to talk about the iTunes reviews, Glenn. Like I said, we have now 16 iTunes reviews. So first of all, Glenn, while I look for the iTunes reviews, tell people why we need iTunes reviews.
The reason why we need iTunes reviews, everybody, because the more iTunes reviews we get and the more better reviews we get, the more people get to know our podcast, the more people get to know about our podcast, the more people we bring in, and the more people we bring in, the better the podcast will be, because we'll get more people listening, And the listeners will talk to us and we get better ideas and we find ways to make the podcast even better.
Completely agree with you, mate. I mean, another reason why I like iTunes reviews, it just... Me, you, Swainy, we don't get paid for making this podcast.
Exactly.
And it takes up a bit of time to actually put them together. And it's a nice little way, you know, like a little reward. It's like a little pat on the back saying, well done, guys. And, you know, whenever I go to iTunes and I see a new review, I'm like, straight away, I text you, Glenn. I text, you know, Swainy and I go, well done, guys. We've got another iTunes review. And it motivates me. It makes me think, you know what? Let's make another episode. Let's make a better episode. Let's keep on doing this. Okay, let me read out the reviews
then.
Okay, we've got one from BUJBJU, I think. And he says, fun and informative, 5-star review. I've just finished listening to the back catalogue of Retro Asylum, and I highly recommend them. Many podcasts I've listened to seem too focused on the business side of the industry, but you can really tell these guys do this for the love of the games and the experience themselves. This makes what these guys have to say very interesting to me and gives me a real motivation to go back and play some of the great games I've missed over the years and revisit ones I didn't. So thanks for taking the time to make these fantastic podcasts, guys. And he's brought some interesting points. I mean, we share some experiences, Glenn. Sometimes you talk about a game that I've never played and it makes me think, wow, I need to play that game.
Exactly.
It's nice knowing that people sometimes they go and revisit games as well, just because we've talked about it. So it's, you know, it's nice. I quite like that.
And it's just completely right. Like the games I played when I was little, I absolutely loved it and loved talking about them because I had such great experiences with them.
Yeah. Okay. We've got another 5-star review, which is our 16th one, Glenn, and it's done by Darren. He gave us 5 stars. He put a great find for any retro gaming enthusiast. He put a great podcast which talks about various aspects of retro gaming. This covers everything from music, gameplay, the modern remakes, and interviews with game developers of the past. They also covered recent events like Replay Expo. The hosts are terrific and provide friendly, relaxed banter, and they go on a journey through the world of retro gaming, a must for nostalgic fans.
So that's brilliant.
No, definitely. Now, okay, Glenn, you know what? We're on episode 10 now. What are you going to bring to the podcast? What sort of things, you know, do you want to talk about? You know, what are you bringing to the show? What are you hoping to achieve?
I just love talking about the games, me, and talking about my experiences. What I like to bring to the podcast, I like to bring my own point of view to the podcast, because I think me, you and Swainy all have, in a way, different views on different games. And
it's
really nice to listen to other people's views.
Definitely, mate. All right, let me tell you what I've got planned. Basically, it's going to be hard for me to be making these podcasts all the time. I'll still edit them, don't get me wrong. But we're going to add a few new podcast hosts as well. So that way, if I can't do it, maybe Swainy and Glenn can record. Or maybe Swainy and Matt can record, or vice versa. And I also want to have a few other people on the podcast as well, like Damien. So that way, you've got even more people's experiences retro gaming. So we're going to have lots more retro gaming hosts. We've also got a few guests, you know, other people from other sites. We're even going to have a girl on a podcast sometime soon. So we'll hear a female's perspective on retro gaming. I've got us lined up with a big name from the retro gaming past. I'm hoping to record this, hopefully, once I get my internet connected, once I've moved house. I'm not gonna say who it is, Glenn. But anyway, other people we're going to have on the podcast is the Oliver Twins. We're going to have them again.
I can't wait to hear the Oliver Twins again.
Definitely. So we're going to talk a little bit about Dizzy's comeback, about what else they've got planned, what their overall view was on the Dizzy sort of remake, and a little bit about their company, Blitz Games, as well. I'm also going to try and get a few other big names from the retro gaming past. And if you listeners can think of someone you'd like us to get on the podcast, let us know and I'll try and work my magic. And if I can, I can. If I can't, I can't. But it's worth a try. You know, together.
I'd like to make a suggestion, though.
Yeah, go for it, buddy.
My suggestion, I'd like to have Steve Benway back one day because the podcast he did with Malk was fantastic.
Well, I'll tell you what, we are going to get Malk. Malk's agreed to alternate between Retro Resistance and Retro Asylum. So Malk's going to appear on the podcast as well. And yeah, maybe we will try and get Steve Benway on as well. So, but I think we're going to try and get different people all the time rather than repeat the same sort of thing. So, Glenn, have you got any thanks or anything you'd like to say to anyone?
I'd like to thank the whole of the community. I'd like to thank you for this, your support. I'd like to thank you for all the kind reviews and all the kind of things people say. And I'd like to thank Tony and Malk and Swaney and everybody in the community.
Fantastic. I would like to thank Swaney again. I think he's a fantastic co-host. I'd like to thank you, Glenn, because you're an amazing co-host. I always tell you, I couldn't do this show without you guys. I'd also like to thank the guys from Retro Resistance, Malk and Tony, a.k.a. the Things Like That show. I think if you guys listen to that show as well, give the guys feedback because, you know, it's hard work doing this podcast and they need your support as well. So, yeah, I'd like to say thanks to them. I'd like to say thanks to Asperger's Gamers for his Nintendo reviews. I'd like to say a big thanks to Potty Boy for his Tears series. I'd like to thank everyone on the site that's currently uploading videos to the site because more and more people are getting involved in making videos for this site now, so it's fantastic. So I think that's it, Glenn, from me.
I'd like to say one big thank you to somebody, Andy, because without Andy, I don't think a lot of this would be possible.
Yeah, I just edit it together, Glenn.
Well, without you, Andy, there'd be no podcast. So a big thank you to you, Andy.
Thank you very much, Glenn. I really appreciate that. So, yeah, goodbye from us then, guys, and see you next time on the Retro Asylum for episode 11. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. Take care of yourselves, and we will see you next time.
Okay, I'll start that bit again. Tell us what you thought of Chase HQ and why you liked it. And then I'll tell you what I've been playing. I can't remember what the hell I've been playing.
All right, Glenn. Are you warm enough?
Yeah, I'm warm enough.
Nice and warm in here.
Yeah. So I'm just speaking to my dad, Andy.
That's all right, mate. No probs. Are you eating?
Four Splash Wave. Music by... there you go. I think I got it.
Who was it by?
There you go. Splash Wave. It's actually on a YouTube video. Right. It says Music by... I thought I saw Music by... Music Splash Wave.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Ooh, I just messed this bit up, Glenn. I'm going to have to edit this bit out. Okay, so, yeah, we have reached episode... I'll start again. I don't know what's wrong with me, Glenn. I'm tired. I've been up since about 4.
Love that game.
Oh, bloody hell, Glenn. Let me hang up this phone. Back in a second.
Right, where is it? I'm on your site now.
Retro Gaming Site Poll.
Right, bear with me. I'm on your site, but it says... Okay, it's just loading it up. Retro Asylum Podcast, I'm on.
No, not Retro Asylum Podcast.
Right, I get off that one.
Retro Gaming.
Right, Retro Gaming.
All right, so we go to Retro Gaming.
Which one is it? Retro Gaming? Is it one with Target Renegade?
Yeah, Weekly Poll. Hello, Retromaniacs. Welcome back to the Retro Asylum podcast. Actually, I should be saying this... I start again, Glenn. Bollocks. Okay.
Come on, Andy.
I know. I've got to get my S in gear.